Welcome to a special edition of, I guess you could call this a PW Torch Livecast Impact Postgame Show. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you today?
Mike, I'm doing good. Impact was pretty decent from what I remember, and yeah, looking forward to chatting about it.
Yeah, this is a special edition. It's sort of an audio review of Impact from last week. I was out of town on Thursday, so we weren't able to do a show, but we will be back this Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right, when Impact goes off the air, and we'll talk live with callers like we do every week on the PW Torch Livecast. But let's get to last week's episode of Impact. This is the episode that aired on April 6th, and we'll get right to it. They started the show going in pretty quickly, right into a match. They had their typical graphics, and they went right into Eli Drake beating Caleb Konley. It was, you know, sort of a throwaway match to a certain extent, but I thought it was pretty cool. They opened the show right with a match. There wasn't even really an introduction. You go into the arena, the bell rings, they went right at it, and then Jeremy Borash welcomed us to the show sort of as the match was going on. I thought that was a different way to start the show, and it started it, you know, upbeat a little bit. You didn't have like a long promo segment or an introduction. You didn't even see ring intros for these guys. They went right into a match.
Yeah, I actually like this quite a bit. I think last week they did the whole kind of like Karen Jarrett thing, opening the show, and it just got the night off to a bad start. So this is like a nice contrast to that. It took me a moment to realize who Caleb Konley was, because I think we've only seen him two or three times maybe, but it was a good way to start the night, even if the match wasn't overly memorable or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just thought it was nice to be able to start the show with a match as opposed to them doing some type of promo segment that put people to sleep. You know, they could go one step further, I think, and maybe advertise a match that's going to open the show the following week. I'd like to see them do that every week. You know, if you could open the show with a match every week, just like that, but advertise it ahead of time so that you know, you tune in right at 8 o'clock, you know what you're going to see, I think that could help build up a little bit of a week-to-week audience, because they did, and we'll get to it, they did a pretty good job with a cliffhanger at the end of this show, but I think advertising, hey, next week, opening the show, you're going to see so-and-so against so-and-so. You know, this is where, I mean, and this is getting a little off topic, but this is where I think like a television championship could really come in handy, not that they need another championship on a two-hour show, but if you had something like a TNA television championship where you know, or sorry, an Impact television championship where it alternates week to week. So you've got a number one contender match that opens the show one week, and then the next week that number one contender, whoever wins that match, gets their title shot. And if that could be what opens the show every week. And I think you could intertwine some stories there of, you know, either a number one contenders match or a television championship match on a weekly basis that sort of is a hook, and you know what you're going to get when you open the show.
I like that idea as well, because if I'm going into Raw, my mind is like bracing myself for a 20-minute show opening promo, probably featuring Stephanie McMahon or Mick Foley of old, so it's not like something that excites me. So I like opening up the show in different ways. And they tried something somewhat similar to that when they had Devon Dudley. At that time, I think it was like Global Championship. I think it was the TV. They renamed it like eight times. But the idea was he would defend it every single week, and then they gave up on it in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd like to see them. And then also, it gives you a segment. It keeps somebody on television every week, you know, because you could even have during the number one contender match, you could have the actual champion is watching the match from ringside, or he's on commentary while the number one contender's match is happening. And it's a way to keep someone on TV every week and intertwine them with some different guys. You could always put fresh matches on, or you could even tell some type of story where maybe you've got a story where somebody becomes number one contender and loses, and then becomes number one contender again and loses. And you can tell that story of, hey, you know what, I've had three shots and I haven't been able to get it done. I mean, there's a lot of ways or a lot of different things you could do with that type of narrative structure. I don't see them making a change like this, but I think it would be – I would prefer something like that over what the Grand Championship has turned into at this point.
I actually like this idea quite a bit the more I think about it, especially since they have all these relationships with these different promotions. You can bring in new wrestlers all the time and just give them a little, it's like gut check in a sense, where you're trying out all these new guys. If they get over, cool, bring it back. If not, just makes the TV champ look stronger.
That's a great point. I didn't even think of that, but you're right. I mean, they've got the relationships now with other international companies. There's an opportunity to bring in some guys and feature them quickly, you know, give them a win in a number one contenders match, give them a championship match, and let your champion go over in the end. And it, you know, you could be building up some wins over not only guys on your own roster, but international talent too. I think that'd be great. I didn't even think of that. All right, we went to Josh Matthews and Jeremy Borash arguing with each other to the point where Bruce Pritchard had to come out and interrupt them and tell them to shut up, basically. And that later on in the show, they would each be picking teams for a giant tag team match. Whatever. You and I have talked, you know, a lot about this whole storyline. I'll say this. On the positive side, at least it's going somewhere, and at least they're doing something with it. It's not just going to be the Jeremy Borash and Josh Matthews argument every week. They're actually going somewhere with this. The only thing they didn't say, and maybe I missed it because I watched the show quickly today, the only thing I didn't hear them say is what the consequence of the match is going to be. You know, if they each pick a team, is it like a loser leaves the announce table match? They didn't really specify that I can remember, but I would like to see them go in that direction. And ideally, I would like to see Josh Matthews end up, Jeremy Borash end up as the play-by-play guy.
You didn't miss anything there. That was kind of the glaring plot hole to me.
Yeah, I was waiting for it, you know, and I'm like, maybe I missed it, maybe, I don't know.
Without that stipulation in place, it just feels so incredibly pointless. I don't know why, like, why would Bobby Lashley want to fight for Josh Matthews? Does he really care if he stays on commentary? Well, I don't get any of it. I like you said, I like that it's actually heading somewhere, and I'm assuming one of them is going to be removed from commentary in the future, but I just have no idea why there's no stakes in place. Like who cares who can assemble the better team? Do they get a trophy or anything? I don't get it.
Exactly. Yeah. There needs to be, I think, some type of consequence there. Stipulation's the wrong word, but something that gives the match some type of meaning, because right now it's just, like you said, all it is just a battle of who can pick the better team. It's just going to give them something else to argue about. Is all it's going to do right now. And they don't get any more of that, I don't think.
No.
After that, they did a Knockouts Gauntlet Battle Royal to determine a number one contender for the Knockouts Championship. And ODB won in this in just under 10 minutes. What were your thoughts on this Gauntlet Battle Royal to determine a number one contender?
There was a lot about this I did not like. I guess I don't know where to start, but okay. So I like Madison Rayne is a heel again. I think she's much better suited in that role, especially with the Josh Matthews connection. However, ODB just beat her in like 30 seconds when they went one-on-one, which seems to just take away any momentum she just gained by turning. There was a couple new competitors, and I don't have all the names figured out yet, but the ring work was really sloppy and their punches were really light, and it just felt very amateurish to me. And then I wouldn't have also brought in, I'm blanking on her name, the woman who is in LAX. I wouldn't have brought her in and then just had her tossed out in such. Yes. I wouldn't have had her tossed out in such unspectacular fashion.
Yeah. I had some issues with this too. You know, they debuted a couple of people here, which I think gets them lost. And look, I mean, you don't need to do something with everybody. If they brought in a couple of Knockouts that are just there for the television taping and they're not going to have any storylines to do with them, then fine. You know, you throw them out there in a gauntlet, they get eliminated, whatever. It's not a big deal. But there was a couple of spots in the match that I thought looked clunky, in particular when Diamante came in and she clotheslined everybody, but everything was going so slow at that point that it looked very obvious that people were just feeding in the clotheslines. I forget who it was. There was one person at one point who was literally, I mean, she had, Diamante had her back turned to one of the knockouts while giving someone else a clothesline, and this third person was standing behind her waiting for her to turn around so that she could run in and feed into a clothesline. And it just looked terrible because, I mean, you don't attack her when her back's turned, and instead you wait for her to turn around and then you run and don't lift your arms up for any type of attack at all. You run right into her arm and go down. I just didn't like that particular spot. I thought it looked ridiculous. It was there to set up ODB as number one contender, which I'm okay with. I don't have a problem with the result, but this just seemed like it was mass confusion without any real need for there to be confusion. I feel like they could have gotten to the desired spot of ODB being the number one contender in a more simpler fashion.
Yeah, because when they brought her back, they already have been, teasing that feud with Rosemary. So it's like Austin Aries winning the 205 Live number one contendership twice in a row. You know there's no other options of who's going to win the match.
Yeah.
So it's like you might as well just get to it and not expose everyone else for not being great workers at the moment. There was probably a lot of nerves there for them being, you know, one of their first big nights, but it was I thought it was pretty bad.
After that, we had the official ending of the DCC. James Storm came out and cut a promo where he basically said he still wants to challenge and become the Impact World Champion again at some point in his career. That's his plan. He was interrupted by Kingston and Bram, his former DCC partners, and I thought Kingston was really good here on the mic when he got into the ring. And I mean, he yelled and screamed, which I'm not always a fan of. I don't think every wrestling promo needs to be yelled and screamed, but I thought that Kingston was good here on the mic, and the setup was basically that James Storm said the plan for DCC was that they were going to challenge for the tag titles, meaning Bram and Kingston, and he was going to challenge for the world title, but it never happened because they could never get on the same page. From there, Kingston and Storm actually ended up going to blows. I think Kingston spit at James Storm, and then Storm jumped Kingston and was able to get Bram out of the way as well. The idea of breaking up the DCC I'm fine with because they never really did anything with them. I think there was potential there to do more, but I'm also okay with James Storm breaking off and being a babyface because they do kind of need a babyface right now, at least at the top, and I think they can get James Storm back to that spot. And then Kingston and Bram, I mean, I'd be okay with Kingston and Bram even staying together as a tag team. I'm not necessarily sure they will do that, but I'd be okay if they stuck them together as a team, or if they broke them apart completely and had all three guys go into singles runs. I think you can get away with Bram and Kingston being singles heels as well, because Kingston showed me more on the mic in this segment here than he had at any other point in this run with Impact so far.
Yeah, completely agree there. Kingston to me so far has just been like a bland, just background henchman. Like, I've always thought Bram had a lot of potential. Same with James Storm, but yeah, Kingston didn't show much. And last week we talked about how KM, we didn't like his debut promo of just shouting. Something about the way Kingston did it just felt a lot more believable. He just has like crazy eyes and he's just intense, and I really liked it. Yeah, I'm with you. I like Ram as a potential upper near main event type talent, but since they're kind of rebooting the tag division and bringing in all these teams, yeah, I'd be fine with those two sticking together as well. And James Storm, I thought he got about the best reception of the night from the crowd, so I thought that was pretty encouraging for his future to maybe go back up the top of the card.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I hadn't really paid attention to that, but you're right. He did. He got a really good reaction, which I think is a good sign, especially because, you know, you got to remember some of those people, and I know they get a lot of the same crowd every night when they're doing those tapings, but some of those people probably did not know that James Storm had essentially turned babyface the week, I think it was the week prior or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. It was basically, you know, one or two nights before, and you probably had some people in the crowd that weren't even aware of that, and to get that type of reaction is I would say, definitely a good sign for him moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I didn't even know if he fully turned babyface there, because there was like a little shoving match And I mean, you knew they were going to split up. I just didn't I wasn't expecting him to jump right back into his cowboy beer drinking ways like that.
Yeah, no, they definitely went all in on the promo and was laid out the roadmap for where they're going, I think, after that.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
Then from there, they went to a three-way triple threat match in the X division where Andrew Everett beat Marche Rocket and Suicide. And I had it as a little more than 6 minutes. I thought this match was okay. I mean, it was a solid X division match. For some reason, they still feel the need to put the X division guys in there with more than one person. I still can't figure that out, why they can't just let these guys have one-on-one matches. They always feel the need to have it be, it's either a triple threat or a six-way match. There's always a million people going, or a million people in the match, and 100,000 things going on at once with people flying everywhere. But I thought it was pretty good. You know, the story they're trying to tell is that Andrew Everett is trying to work his way back up to challenging Trevor Lee for the X Division title, and obviously to do that, he needed to win this match, and it just, yeah, I mean, I thought it was just okay, you know.
Yeah. It served its purpose of getting Andrew Everett in there, setting up his feud with Trevor Lee. But yeah, I can't get invested in any of these random matches anymore. I mean, I guess they've been doing it for 10 years now, but it's just, yeah, like you said, 3, 4, 5, 6 random competitors in Suicide. I think I made note last week, but it's so weird they brought him back because he doesn't win. There's no explanation why he's back. We don't know who he is. And same with Marche Rocket. Like, I think he maybe got to talk his first night in. Otherwise, we know nothing about him. So they just have these characters that show up. And they're not even like a Kurt Hawkins where they lose, but we at least know who they are. They just bring back people like that. And it just doesn't make for a lot of excitement.
Yeah, and even, I mean, the one thing I noticed here, too, is even the announce team didn't seem to care. I mean, they were arguing with each other. They were talking about who they were going to pick for their teams. You know, if the people that are literally in charge of talking about the show aren't interested in talking about the show and what's going on in front of them, then I think it's going to be hard for people to really invest into what's going on in the ring, because it just didn't even seem like there were points in that 6 minutes that it didn't even seem like the commentary team was interested in what was going on in the ring.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think at this point, just like the first half, I was already like, this is going to be another just colossal, amazingly awful episode. Like, they're arguing to me was getting at this point, just talking about their teams. It was rough. But luckily, I guess the stuff we're going to talk about at least got a bit better.
Yeah, from there, Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards in a last man standing match. I thought this was fantastic. The match went more than 20 minutes. I thought they told a really awesome story, especially at the end. The finish of the match came where Davy Richards wrapped a chain around his ankle, and Angelina Love had essentially was holding Eddie Edwards there for Davy to kick him in the head with the chain wrapped around his foot. And they teased, you know, Davy not wanting to do it and looking down and having second thoughts. Angelina Love grabbed him. Made him, you know, made him look her in the eye, and at one point I think she yelled, "You need to do it for me," and he just kicked Eddie Edwards' head off with a chain. I mean, it was a vicious kick. But this match went well over 20 minutes. It ate up. My only complaint about it is that it didn't close the show. And you know, I thought that this should have been your main event, but I thought that this match was great. I thought it was one of the best things we've seen, match or segment. One of the best things we've seen on Impact in a while. You know, I just thought that this match was fantastic.
Completely agree. We've talked, I guess, for months now just about this feud and how it's one of the better parts of the show. I'd say just in general, just going off of WWE and Impact, I think this is the best written storyline of the year so far. And the matches are delivering in the ring. And unlike most matches where I'm like, I only want to see it a couple times, I want to see a few more variations of this. I think I wrote in my hits and misses that it's too bad they don't have a couple more pay-per-views where this could be like a huge match with no commercial breaks. But from what we saw, great stuff. It went over 20 minutes, like you said, and it's either this and El Patron versus EC3, I think, is the two best matches this year on Impact.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good match, too. But I completely agree with you. But I mean, it's early. We're only in April. But this is definitely in the running for feud of the year across any company, you know, at least here in North America. I think that they've played to the emotion really, really well. I mean, they were times in this match where they cut away to Eddie Edwards' wife, who's at ringside, and they're playing off. I mean, it's simple. It's not a convoluted thing. It's just you've got the jealous partner, jealous of his partner's success, and the evil, manipulative wife who may or may not be pulling the strings. I mean, they're not telling this difficult story with all these different things it's hard to keep up with. It's been kept pretty simple, but they're pushing on emotional buttons that you just don't see a lot of nowadays. I completely agree with you. I think this has been written exceptionally well, from their promos to their matches to their interactions. I mean, we talked about it when they first did the turn with Davey back, I think it was a couple of months ago now, the aggressiveness, and he had beaten down Eddie Edwards in back-to-back weeks, and the aggressiveness that they showed in those segments, we haven't seen that in a long time in wrestling. At least not here in North America, on North American television. It's been unbelievable, and it's going to get overlooked because it's not being watched by, you know, 3 million people every week. But it's, for my money, I agree with you. I think it's been the best written story of the year so far in pro wrestling. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, my prediction for this thing back in January was that they could go full circle with it, especially where you've got Angelina Love pulling the strings. And that was evident here because they played up the fact that it looked like Davey didn't want to throw that kick at the end. At some point does he tell her, get out of the way, I'm not doing this anymore, and reunites with his partner. And if this is Davey Richards' last year in wrestling, I think you want to see him go out as a babyface. You want to see that reunion at some point over the course of this year. And I don't know. I mean, I'm almost getting to the point now where how do you have these guys reunite, you know? they've done so many things to each other, and what Davey's done to Eddie Edwards' wife. I mean, how do you realistically have these guys reunite and have Eddie Edwards get over that? But maybe they start to turn the story in the direction of Davey's not the evil one, Angelina Love is the evil one, and she's pulling the strings. I could see that sort of being the next chapter in where they go with this.
Yeah, I like that too. There's a lot of different routes they can go, and something that else that strikes me is it's so vicious, this angle. And the thing is, Davey Richards keeps coming out on top. Like, as we've seen in WWE, they're afraid to have their heels look overly strong, and the baby faces almost always get the revenge within a week or two. But this is like making you wait for it, like Tommy Dreamer and Raven, just like,
yeah,
Eddie just can't do it. And it's fantastic because there's just not enough of that in wrestling where one guy is just dominating the feud.
100%. Yeah, 100%. I agree. You know, I hadn't even really thought about it from that perspective, but you're right. Why is this getting over? Why is he getting over as a heel? They're letting their heel get heat.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing, and he's getting a lot of it. I mean, that kick at the end of the match, the one that eventually put him down, where he had the chain wrapped around his ankle, I'm watching the show this afternoon. By the way, I don't think we mentioned it. It is Monday, April 10th, when we record this. But I was watching the show this afternoon. I'm sitting in my living room by myself, and when he delivered that kick, me, a grown man, went, ooh, because it looked I guess from a wrestling standpoint, it looked awesome. It looked like he kicked him in the head with a chain wrapped around his foot. I mean, it was just vicious, like you said. And everything about this has been vicious.
Yeah, like you said, at this point, I'm going to be surprised if this doesn't end up I think it's the best feud of the year. It's interesting that the old creative team started this angle, and the new one is running with it and still doing a solid job with it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point. Then after this ended, I think justifiably they needed to reset things a little bit. They went to some video packages. They went to Jeremy Borash going over some highlights of LAX winning the tag team championships last week. They were trying to get, you know, give people a break, I think, after watching such a highly emotional and pretty aggressive match. And then later on in the show, one segment later, after some reset was going on, Alberto El Patron picked up a win over someone. And I went back and tried to find this guy's name, and I couldn't understand what they were saying. It sounded like John something.
Mm-hmm.
But Alberto El Patron beat, I have it in my notes, Alberto El Patron beat someone to pick up a win, and then essentially challenged Lashley and called him out again after the match. What did you think of them getting El Patron back on TV here, essentially just, you know, not even, it was a squash match, just to sort of get him over.
My main issue with this was that he's this hot free agent. Fans still like him. He wasn't completely buried in WWE. He has an upside, and they just didn't talk about him enough. Yeah, I could be wrong, but I felt the first time they mentioned he was going to be on the show was a graphic that aired like 5 minutes before his match, just like El Patron coming up. Otherwise, the squash itself, I'm fine with. I'm fine with, you know, having stars come in, just destroy somebody in 30 seconds. I think that makes them look good. It makes you anticipate them fighting other people. But it just felt so weird that they didn't make him feel like a bigger deal throughout the show.
Yeah, and even then, when this segment was over, I thought it was a little strange. It just ended. You know, he had called out Lashley, and then I think El Patron's music began playing again, and they just immediately cut to a backstage interview. Like it ended really abruptly to me, and I don't know if there was some editing going on. Maybe something did happen initially, and they changed their mind and didn't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like he called out Lashley, and then the segment just abruptly cut to an interview in the back.
Yeah, it was just a very strange night from that perspective. Because I don't think he was also. I don't think he was on last week. He was maybe on the week before that, but. Just a bit of a missed opportunity there to try and keep his momentum up and make him seem like this, you know, larger-than-life star in the company.
Yeah, I agree. After that, they went to a backstage interview. Like I said, they cut right to it. Mackenzie Mitchell was interviewing Allie and Braxton Sutter. They were interrupted by KM and Sienna. They bickered. They went back and forth. Karen Jarrett walked in the room and set up a mixed tag for next week. So it'll be KM and Sienna against Allie and Braxton Sutter next week. On Impact, kind of saw this coming. I mean, I think everybody, you know, once they introduced Sienna and her cousin, KM, I believe it is, you sort of figure they were going to end up in a mixed tag match here at some point.
Yeah, at that point in the show, I was pretty happy that Karen hadn't showed up yet, and then she did. It was so close. We made note of last week how it's weird they're not letting Allie talk. And they let her say, like, two sentences on this show before she was interrupted. So whatever momentum they had out of that wedding, to me, feels just about completely gone between Braxton and her at this point.
Then we went to the final segment of the show, the main event, which was Matthews and Borash picking their teams. Before they went to the main event, they did have another Fury Unleashed vignette video aired. We'll find out what's going to happen with those coming up on Thursday, because the graphics at 4:13:17. So we'll know what that's all about coming up this week. Bruce Pritchard came to the ring. He was sort of the moderator or the interviewer, making sure that things stayed in line with Matthews and Borash making their picks for their teams. Josh Matthews was up first. He selected Bobby Lashley. He gave Lashley a goat shirt and then said something to the effect of his team will be the greatest of all time. And then after that, Jeremy Borash made his first pick, which was Alberto El Patron. So they went with the first picks being the match that it looked like they were setting up earlier, just a couple of segments before, with the two first-round picks being El Patron and Lashley here.
I guess that makes sense. That's about the biggest feud they can do in Impact right now, is those two. They'll probably do a rematch relatively soon. So I think it works to just kind of drag it out before they actually lock up one more time.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more, and Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ringrust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
Josh's second pick was Bram, sort of odd one to me, especially when he was in a segment earlier, and it looked like they may have been keeping Bram and Kingston together as a tag team. But Bram was Josh Matthews' second pick. Jeremy Borash's second pick was Chris Adonis, the former Chris Masters, who was involved with Impact almost 2 years ago when they were doing the GFW invasion angle. I thought that Adonis got a pretty good reaction. I've always liked him better as a heel, but he's another guy, he's a recognizable face anyway, as someone that Impact might be able to use here over the next coming months.
Yeah, I was always a bit confused why he never got another shot in WWE, because he was never a great worker, but he was a pretty poor one when he started, and he turned into a decent hand. He just never got close to getting that masterpiece type push again. So I'll be curious to see how he does in Impact, but also I agree. I don't know how well he's going to get over as a babyface. He just seems kind of naturally heelish to me.
Yeah, he's still young, too. He's only 34 years old. I mean, he was released from WWE. He was in his mid-20s. When he got that first push, when he first came up, and he had matches against Shawn Michaels, and I think he had a match against Ric Flair on pay-per-view, he was in his very early 20s at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think people forget that. I mean, 34 years old, for a pro athlete, for an NFL player, it's old. For a pro mm-hmm. wrestler, 34, you still got at least, 11 years left. I mean, Chris Jericho is still going. Goldberg was just going at 50. So he's still, pretty young, and I think they could do some stuff with him. Like, I agree with you. I think he's better as a heel. I'm not sure that debuting him here was necessarily the best idea. The reason being, we'll get to it in a second here, they had mm-hmm. another debut over the course of these picks. But also, I felt like having him be second with guys coming after him, especially another big return, it just sort of feels like he could get lost in the shuffle here.
Completely agreed. Yeah, he was overshadowed by at least the next return. Maybe the next two, I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So from there, Josh's third pick was Eli Drake. Tyrus walked out with him. They didn't say that Tyrus was a pick, but Tyrus said that he goes where Drake goes. Of course, Tyrus back with Eli Drake as sort of the hired muscle. They went back and forth a little bit. I think they went back and forth with each team sort of saying some stuff. And then finally, Matthews yelled, "Get him," and Tyrus is apparently part of Josh Matthews' team because all four guys, Drake, Tyrus, Bram, and Lashley, jumped the two picks for Jeremy Borash, who are out there, and Alberto El Patron and Chris Adonis. So they jumped the two baby faces. They were beating them up 4-on-2. A couple seconds later, we hear music play, we look back, Matt Morgan's video is on the screen, and Matt Morgan returns and runs down and sort of takes out the heels, hits a double clothesline, he hits a big boot on someone. The crowd, I thought, was actually cheering you know, he got a pretty good reaction. Morgan had a brief stare down with Lashley, and then the segment sort of ended with Matt Morgan standing tall, not really the other guys, you know, the other one standing mm-hmm. tall, not the whole team. It was essentially just Morgan. And then we saw a limo show up, and somebody gets out and was entering the building. We don't know who it was. Pope, I think, even asked who it might be. They didn't show a face. We just saw we saw feet and legs, you know, walking in towards the building. I think it was wearing a black suit. Pope said, you know, very reminiscent of WCW Nitro. They were out of time, and the cameras would keep rolling to show us what would happen next week. But they teased that was going to be Bore Ash's fourth pick. I'm interested in seeing where they go with that, because two out of his three were returning or debuts. Re-debuts, I guess, because Adonis mm-hmm. was in the company before. And Chris Adonis and Matt Morgan, we haven't read spoilers. We don't on the show and talk about them. We'll talk about them when they happen on the air. I hope that this is not a disappointment, because they've built, you know, they went going off the air the way they did, it leads you to believe that that fourth guy could be someone big.
Yes. I haven't read. I don't know who it is either. I've been avoiding spoilers. But if you're going to go out like that, it has to be at least as big as Matt Morgan, I would assume,
yeah.
or, you know, bigger.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be a letdown. So, excellent way to end the show, I thought. I love mysteries in wrestling. And just having a week to speculate who it's going to be, who, you know, you can talk with your friends and all that. So just a great way to end the show. And I thought Morgan looked fantastic for not wrestling really in years. I think he had one match in TNA a couple of years ago against Bram for one night. But otherwise, he's been gone for a long time. And the crowd reacted to him big. And I think if pushed right, he could be a top 5 player in the company, at least, you know, put on some good matches with Lashley and EC3 and El Patron. I think he gives another big heavyweight for them to work with.
I definitely agree. Yeah, he could be pushed up to the top of that babyface roster. He was sort of there when he left. I mean, I remember at the time being a little surprised when he left and sort of thinking, okay, well, he must be going to WWE.
Yeah.
And he never showed up there because he had some steam towards the end of his run in TNA. So I agree with you, though. It could be a letdown. I think it needs to be a name that people know, either somebody that's big on the roster. I don't know who somebody big on the roster is, though. You know, my fear is that it's EC3.
Yep.
Just because that's I don't think that's big enough, you know. They built it. I mean, I don't know. If you were to ask me, make a prediction, I think it's EC3. I hope it's not, mm-hmm. because I think that's going to be like, oh. The fact that they wouldn't show who it was, I mean, it felt like they were playing up a debut or a return, similar to Adonis and Morgan. I wondered at first, you know, is this a way for them to not, you know, we talked about how they overshadowed Chris Adonis a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is this their way of trying to not overshadow the return of Matt Morgan by being able to show that fourth pick on the following week, so that the Matt Morgan return is the big story for this show, and then for next week's show, whomever debuting or returning is the big news next week. It could be a way to split it up and not have Matt Morgan get lost in the shuffle, but my fear is that it's just going to be EC3 and that'll be it, because he seemed to be the one guy that was sort of missing, you know, from the show.
That was, yes, that's probably my number two fear. I think my number one is Jeff Jarrett. But I don't know.
I didn't even consider Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, just like in my mind, I'm picturing just him and Karen Jarrett, interacting with each other, and somehow she called him up to restore order, or I don't know, but I'm going to guess it's probably not him, but I will leave that open to be afraid of.
Yeah, that's a legitimate fear too. you know what? The one guy that I think this could be, And we won't know. And again, this isn't really a spoiler per se, because I remember reading a news story about it. But I did mention on the show a couple of weeks ago that there was a report out there that Nick Aldis, who was the former Magnus in TNA, had re-signed. So that's who I originally thought of. You know, is this Nick Aldis's re-debut, and they didn't want to do it the same show as Matt Morgan so as to not get those two things lost, you know?
Yeah.
You can split it up and do it over two shows. And it would sort of make sense with what Jeremy Borash is doing. You know, he talked about going off the board when he picked up some of his guys to try to trick Josh Matthews. So that's my hope. I hope it's Nick Aldis. I hope it's not Jeff Jarrett, and I hope it's not EC3. No offense to EC3. I like the character. I like EC3, but I think he would be a letdown compared to someone big like that returning.
Oh, completely agree. And if it is Magnus, that's a great spot for them to put him in, you know, coming out of a limo, all dressed up. You know, it makes it, because he was briefly their world heavyweight champion, so it'd be encouraging to see them push him at that level again. This just popped into my mind, though. Like, if this whole, like, assembling teams thing just came out of nowhere on the spot, then it's a pretty good and convenient excuse or way for Morgan, Masters, and Magnus to all have just conveniently been in the area.
That's a good point. I had not even thought of that. And I usually really hate things like that, where, you know, they book a main event and all of a sudden 45 minutes later they're in the ring. But you're right. They told them an hour before this happened that they were going to be picking teams. And it just so happened that Chris Adonis and Matt Morgan were in Orlando. That's a really good point. Yeah, I wish maybe they would have done, hey, next week you're going to pick teams. That might make a little more realistic sense from a logic standpoint to not have those guys just happen to be in the building. But one more. So that sort of wraps up this show. They went off the air with, you know, the guy in the suit walking into the building. We didn't know who it was. But one more topic I wanted to hit on before we wrapped up for this week is an interview that I read when I was away with Jeff Jarrett. And this sort of ties into potentially Nick Aldis, you know, debuting with Impact. He had an interesting comment, and I don't remember who the interview was with. I wish I did. But when I was away over the week for work, I was in Boris's neighborhood. I was in Chicago. But when I was reading, I was trying to catch up on my wrestling when I had some time off. I was out there. If you're a college hockey fan, I was out there covering the Frozen Four for my day job at collegehockeynews.com. But anyway, when I was out there, I was trying to keep up with my wrestling. I read an interview with Jeff Jarrett, who said something to the effect of Global Force and Impact are going to become one. It sort of sounded like Global Force was going to just be absorbed into Impact, and we've seen that a little bit, because, you know, if Nick Aldis debuts, he's the GFW heavyweight champion. We've seen the Next Gen championship on Impact. I believe Reno Scum was tied to Global Force at one point. And a couple of other guys. Chris Adonis was tied to Global Force. So it doesn't, I don't think, and we've been asked this by some callers in the show, I don't think they're necessarily going to change the company to Global Force Wrestling. I think the company is Impact Wrestling. But what do you think of the potential for them to sort of just be absorbed into each other and become one? I mean, to me it makes sense. Jeff Jarrett's been trying to find a television home for Global Force for 2 years now and hasn't been able to do it. So now that he's back in a full-time role with Impact, to me, it sort of makes logical sense to Global Force is going to take a back seat. I can't see how Anthem would allow him to basically run the wrestling operation side of their company while also running his own wrestling company elsewhere that would theoretically be a competitor when it comes to television.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I saw that interview too. I think he did it with David Penzer at Hannibal TV, but I could be wrong. I watched a few of those, but that never made sense to me at all, how Global Force Wrestling was going to continue on in any form. And he kept saying that in interviews, like, no, GFW is still alive and well, looking for partners, but I don't even know how he would go on. Like you said, Anthem, I don't see how they would be a fan of that, of letting him try to profit off another wrestling company. And then he shot that footage, like 2 years ago. And a bunch of those guys are gone from the company, or they've been in Impact for so long. Like, I don't see, like, that footage, I don't know if it'll ever see the light of day, but I can't imagine it's even worth anything at this point, because it's just, like, four episodes of stuff that doesn't exist anymore. So, a very interesting comment. I'm assuming when Nick Aldis comes in, he's going to bring that belt. They're going to do something. They'll probably merge some titles, have Aldis, take on the champ and try to merge Next Gen with Grand Championship, maybe get rid of Grand Championship. I guess that's just kind of my guess, is just kind of have a series of matches and come up with new champs.
Yeah, I'm looking at the GFW roster now, and there's a couple of guys that they've already absorbed and others that I think they could. Reno Scum is listed on their roster, so they were tied to them, to GFW. Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett were both initially came into Impact as part of the GFW invasion. There's the rumor that Nick Aldis is signed. He's their current world champion, like I said. And then there's some other interesting names here that I'd like to see them go after. Cody Rhodes is on the GFW roster, mm-hmm. but there's other guys like Chris Adonis. I'm noticing more here. Chris Adonis was on the GFW roster as well. But there's a couple of others in here that I think could do some good things for Impact if they were to decide to bring him in. One of them being Chael Sonnen. He's not going to wrestle.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Former UFC fighter Chael Sonnen, I believe, did commentary for those GFW shows. He's obviously an interesting character and pretty good on the mic. So, maybe him in some type of commentary role could be good down the road. Davey Boy Smith Jr. is on the GFW roster, so if there's a relationship there, I was a big fan of his in WWE and thought he could do some big things as a singles guy. They never really did much with him, though. But he's obviously made a name for himself in Japan as well. And there's some others. I was a Lance Hoyt fan, too, and he's on the GFW roster. The New Heavenly Bodies is a tag team on the GFW roster, and there's some guys there. Chris Sabin, although Chris Sabin's under contract with Ring of Honor, but there's some talent on that GFW roster that Jeff Jarrett obviously has a relationship with that I wonder gets absorbed into the Impact roster somehow. And it seems like some of them already have. It's just a matter of how many, down the road here.
Yeah, that I would be all for. We've talked about a couple of times in the past, just Impact felt really flat last year. It felt it was the same 20, 25 people every single week. One of the big improvements over the past five shows is new people are showing up. Just makes the show feel fresher. So if they want to bring in guys like Hoyt and Davey Boy Smith, I'd be all for that. I just don't want to see another GFW invasion of any sort. If they want to merge the belts and get it over with, I guess it's fine, but I just don't see anybody out there who's really passionate about Global Force Wrestling who, really wants them to win this war.
Yeah, I don't think an invasion makes sense at this point.
Uh-huh.
For a lot of the same reasons you just said. I mean, what are they? Who's invading? I mean, they're not really
right.
A company. You know what I mean? Like, there's no brand there. They haven't been on TV. They're not a company. So who's invading you? Just a group of people. But I think there's some potential there, and I don't think that I would have to imagine that Impact is the brand. I know we've been questioned a couple times. Is it just going to become Global Force? I don't think they're doing that, but I think they're going to absorb some of the people that Global Force was using, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera. And I think that Jeff Jarrett, in a position of power with Impact, is going to bring some of those people in. And realistically, if Jeff Jarrett is running Impact again, he doesn't need Global Force. He started Global Force because he was, kicked out of TNA. That's the reason he did it. He still wanted to be in wrestling, and he was kicked out of his own company. In this case, he's involved again. He's running the show. So if that's really truly the case, he doesn't really need Global Force Wrestling. It's a project that never got off the ground and doesn't seem like it ever will.
I mean, yeah, how lucky is Jeff Jarrett? Because he gave up, I don't know, 10% to whatever shares he had of TNA in exchange for running the Global Force Wrestling Invasion that lasted a month.
Yeah.
and didn't do anything for them, and yet he lucked back into taking over the entire company himself. So, I mean, good for him. It's just an incredible past couple of years for him.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. All right, well, I think that'll do it for us as we reviewed Impact. We'll be back, like I said, on our regularly scheduled PW Torch Livecast Impact post-game show coming up on Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, right when Impact goes off the air. For PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek, I am Mike McMahon. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you again Thursday after Impact goes off the air on the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with a one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Live!